You're listening to Yale Radio WYBC. This is Brainerd Carey with the lives of the artists, architects, curators, and more.
Today on our show, we're talking with Magnus Off Petersens. He's a head curator of contemporary art at Modern Museet in Stockholm, which is where he is now. Magnus, thanks so much for talking with me today.
Thank you, Brainerd.
Let's begin with talking about what's happening at the museum. I want to talk about really what you've been doing in the last year, which is multiple projects all over the world. But to begin with, what are you working on or at the museum right now?
Well, at the moment, I am working on bringing up a show that I curated for Moderna Museet in Malmö. And that will tour to Moderna Museet here in Stockholm and open in March. So that's my next bigger thing at the museum in Stockholm. And then I have two more shows in the pipeline that is a little bit early to talk about, actually. But I also have projects that have been touring and are finishing up and so on. So something very soon and something a bit further away.
Okay. Yeah. I want to talk about those, but explain to me also, there's two different, in the Moderna Museet, there's two different locations, correct? Because you were saying you created it for
exactly,
one that's traveling. Can you talk about those two locations? Because
yeah.
I've only seen that one that was on a small
sure.
island in Stockholm, but I don't know both of them.
Yeah, no, this was where I was hired, and I'm from Stockholm myself, born and bred, So I started at the museum, and that was founded in, it opened for the public in 58, but we kind of had a pre-show in 56. So, and then in 2000, oh, I should have checked this, but I think about 6 years ago or so, we opened a museum also in the city of Malmö in southern Sweden, on the southern tip. And so that's like a smaller Moderna Museet. We share the collection and, you know, we get together to talk about the program, but they are semi-independent, so to say. So it's kind of built on the model of Tate Liverpool or Tate St. Ives or so. And it was by invitation from the city and the region that a museum building or a public gallery that had been operating in the city for some time in a beautiful turbine hall was folded. It folded and the place was empty for 2 years or so. And they asked us, because we often complain that our museum is, you know, we have a big collection and a lot of ideas. So they invited us to kind of a new model for Sweden that it's three owners in a way. It's the state, which in Stockholm we're a state museum. Under the Department of Culture, and the city and the region is not involved in any sense like that. But in Malmö, it's the city, the region, and the state that share the financing of the place. We show both temporary shows in Malmö and the collection, but not permanently. Like in Stockholm, we have like 19 galleries for the collection, and then we can make kind of smaller shows there also, but we have also two bigger spaces for temporary shows. But for Malmö, in order to be able to kind of, it was an interesting new way to work with the collection also, to make a larger show more curated and thematic from the collection, with the possibility of making some loans also. So that's what I did now. I made a show that was based on the collection and a certain period and idea. And then I just made a few loans. Because it's like it's like 600 kilometers between Stockholm and Malmö, so the audience is not the same. So it's perfectly fine to tour in between. So now it's coming up here.
And so what is the show that you created for Malmö that is touring? What was that? Was in that
yeah,
show?
it's kind of in this series of shows with a focus on a certain period and a certain part of the collection. So we had Russian constructivism, for example, and this show is about New York in the 60s, and it has a very dry title, kind of like some of the works had. It's called Objects and Bodies at Rest and in Motion. So it's kind of a meeting between, well, kind of a starting point was a work by Simone Forti, Slant Board, that she made as a, she commissioned the kind of object as a prop from her then husband, Robert Morris, who made this in 1964, and it was kind of before his more famous minimalist shows in New York galleries. And her dancers would use this as a prop to perform, and that's how it was presented as a work by her. So this is a known, you know, but not overly known in wider circles, that there is this relationship to the body and to theatricality and so forth, as it was also received in the time by Michael Fried and others in minimalism, that the sculptures are as kind of, Rosalind Krauss also wrote this, they are as props or objects on a stage, and kind of directs the movements of the audience, who becomes participants in a way. So I thought it could be interesting to show something that is not so much focused on the objects as, you know, you can see them in shows, and they become such, you know, icons of, and also the market have driven up those things. But to make a show where, and so we had, we still have dancers performing in the show now and then, and it's also other works, videos with Yvonne Reiner and Trisha Brown, and we have like a floor piece by Carl Andre, which kind of makes you quite aware of your body if you should walk across it, or you know, things like this. So that's the kind of.
Well, it sounds like a remarkable collection you're pulling from you. That's all from the collection.
Oh,
yeah,
I think so. We're quite lucky. The core of those works are from a part of the Moderna Museet collection, actually called New York Collection, which was assembled by artists and donated to the museum in 73, if I remember correctly, 72, 73. To the then director, Pontius Tien, was part of collecting that, and Robert Rauschenberg and others were involved, and they made kind of a print portfolio to finance, in a way, also some of the works on the donation of it.
And so that's traveling now, correct?
Yeah, well, at the moment it's in Malmö, and then it will come up to Stockholm, and it won't continue traveling. But that's what I have on at the moment.
And then let's look at this year. I know you've been busy this year. You also put together a show that almost sounds related, but at Whitechapel. So tell us a little bit about Whitechapel, and then I'm going to ask you about the Venice Biennial as well. But yeah, the Whitechapel Gallery,
sure.
I'd be interested.
Yeah, I was chief curator at Whitechapel Gallery about 2 years ago now. And for family reasons, I moved back to Stockholm, but I had initiated and started some project that I was lucky enough that I could finish. And so I worked part-time at Moderna Museet, and I was curator at large at Whitechapel Gallery to kind of see those projects through. And the last one that opened at Whitechapel was in January this year, and it was called Adventures of the Black Square, Abstract Art and Society, 1915 to 2015, and it was with Ivona Blaswick, the director, so we curated it together, and we had a great advisory team also. So it's what it sounds like. It was looking at geometric abstraction in a way from 1915, the Malevich Black Square, until today, and also kind of trying to look at it to kind of think of it again as a utopian political idea, and not some dead formalism, you know, that sometimes geometric abstraction can become turned into something quite full of rules and almost bureaucratic, some have thought, and you forgot get this kind of ideas of transforming society through art, and that this was a new art for a new age and so forth. But following also that thread from geometric abstraction in Russian constructivism and Bauhaus and so forth to the postmodern age, when it's kind of a disappointment in a way in the utopian ideals, and also the idea of the last image kind of that was, you know, met people like Malevich and others sometimes think that they can create an image that is completely without references. But today, you know, if you paint a black square, it's full of references. So right. It was interesting also to see how different both the intentions of the artist, but also the water you step down in with a monochrome, for example, changes so much that it never means the same thing. So it was a very exciting, fun project to work on, and almost too large and too ambitious for the size of Whitechapel Gallery, even though it's big, but we had over 100 artists, and you can imagine over 100 years of abstract art.
And that was a historical show. There wasn't contemporary or living artists in that show, were there?
Well, there were. There were new works from made in the gallery even. So it was from 1915 to 2015. So international artists, and also ambition of looking at a more global art history. You know, to decenter modernism and look at art from Peru, Africa. Not trying to repeat the same canon. Yeah.
Right, that really sounds like a museum show as opposed to a large gallery show.
Yeah.
That incredible breadth to that show. And Magnus, can you tell me a little bit about the show in the Venice Biennale and how that came together and what was happening there as well?
Yes, that was an opportunity that I thought was exciting. I was invited to curate as kind of a freelance because I was curator at large at Whitechapel and not working full time at Moderna. I thought I could kind of do it in between. So it was VAC Foundation, Victoria, and it was a venue called Palazzo Tre Occhi, the Three Eyes, a nice building on Giudecca in Venice, quite close to the Santa Maria Maggiore, and right on the dock. And the program that the VAC have had before was they did the show on the previous Venice Biennial also, where they have a Russian artist and they kind of invite to a dialogue some other artist. So I was invited to pick that artist and curate the show. So it was Arseny Zhilyaev, a young Russian artist, and whom I met when I was researching in Moscow for Adventures of the Black Square, actually, and Mark Dion from New York or Bedford, Massachusetts, I think, actually, but American. And they were kind of a generation apart, but shared a lot of interests in museums, in displays of, and kind of imaginary museums and so on. So we called it Future Histories. So Mark Dion had one floor where he kind of made a piece called The Wonder Workshop, where he had invented a story of a traveler in the 1500s maybe, who goes to South America, finds a beautiful bird that he kills and brings back to Europe and has its taxidermied, and sells it to a collector who puts it into an painting and then turns into an engraving, which ends up in a book. And that was the sort of end of the story for the bird 400 years ago, 500 years ago. And then Mark picks up the thread and creates a Wunderkammer object, kind of. So he turns those two-dimensional engravings into sculptures that he puts into a kind of cabinet of curiosities. And it's a kind of a process that you can witness, the audience could see. He was there like a Renaissance workshop where there were different stages of the, you know, the studiolo of the master, and then the rough workshop, and then the painting workshop, and so on. And at the end, you came into this Wunderkammer, which was darkly lit, and the objects, the strange animals and cones and shells and so forth, were painted in fluorescent lights. So it was really like a very surreal Wunderkammer.
Yeah, so that sounds kind of haunting and beautiful to be inside that.
It really was. And Arseny had another floor. So if Mark was kind of looking at the origin of museums in the kind of cabinet of curiosities and so forth, and reviving that and bringing the thread from the 1500s, then Arseny was kind of standing in the future, looking at the history of space travel and colonization, yeah, space colonization, which was kind of a driving force behind the Soviet and the space program to colonize.
Right, you mean that this idea of colonizing space?
Yeah,
behind
yeah.
the program, not
and
just
he
exploring.
Traces it to yeah, actually to make the idea that Earth would be overpopulated in the future, and we need to be able to have colonies on other planets. And that was very inspired by a Russian philosopher, Fyodorov, a contemporary of Tolstoy, who had ideas of resurrecting, a very strange mixture of Russian Orthodox Christianity and science fiction ideas, too, which today may not sound so very far away, of gene manipulation and cloning and reaching eternal life. And that would make Earth very overpopulated. Not only that, he would resurrect the ancestors. That was the duty. and then they speculated on, you know, going to other planets and so forth. And Arseny made a future museum telling the story of from Fyodorov to the first cosmonauts with Laika, the dog, and everything up into the future. So
yeah, those are sorry to interrupt, but those are kind of incredible stories that you're talking
yeah.
about, ways of colonizing the planet. I mean, it sounds like science fiction now with a mix of what's actually happening. Where did those stories come from? What was the source of those?
Well, Arseny is really kind of one of those researchers, artists, who also writes a lot, and he's interested in this. So cosmism is something that not only him, but also Anton Vidocq has made a film about it now. I haven't seen it, unfortunately, yet, but Boris Groys has written about cosmism. So I think it's something that people are starting to talk about again, this strange mixture of sci-fi and religion, and how some of it is uncannily becoming not so impossible anymore. Mm-hmm. And it's also, he makes this in a kind of a pompous, you know, our great leaders, kind of a, so it's kind of a retro futuristic, you know, the museum is created. And on the ground floor, so they had one floor each for those large scale kind of narratives of, you know, their own museum. And then on the ground floor, we borrowed works from collections that they both had made that kind of also referenced collections and museums. So Arseny, for example, had made something in between curatorial and artistic projects as interventions in existing museums, working with the collection and with other artists and telling alternative histories and so on. And Mark has done the same with kind of had made shows for oceanic museums, for example. He goes into natural history museums and so on. So it's also kind of in between making art and curatorial practice in a way. And another kind of thread that is interesting is the thread of the colonization. That's the traveler that Mark Dion imagined was a Western guy traveling to the colonies. And with Arseny, it's a kind of a dream of colonizing space. But there's something, you know, double-edged sword in this idea of knowledge and learning curiosity driving this kind of adventures to unknown territories, but it's also the kind of wish to colonize and to become master of this, you know, that knowledge is also power. So I thought it was really interesting. Yeah,
it's fascinating. I find it fascinating. And so that almost wraps up your year. Now you're back at the Museet, correct?
Working at Moderna Museet. Yeah.
And we've talked about the permanent collections in there at the Museet now. Are you also working with younger artists, local artists? In other words, how do you work with contemporary artists today?
We have a smaller show now up with Lina Selander, who's a Swedish artist, fantastic filmmaker, working in a kind of tradition of essay films, but very poetic. And she is actually also a show that we curated. Lena Essling at the museum curated it for the Swedish Pavilion and at the Venice Biennial. And Moderna Museet usually have that responsibility of representing Sweden at the Venice Biennial. But if you're not going to Venice, you'd never see what's... So we thought it was a good idea to bring that project back to the museum with the catalog and everything. So that's Lina Selander. We have a kind of idea that in the permanent collection, as well as in the program, we mix the Swedish and the local with the international, and also with a new understanding of what international is. It used to be the NATO alliance minus Denmark and Norway, you know, that was called international art. But today we know that great art is made in India and all over the world. So we try to work with this and also in the more historic parts to kind of rethink our collection and make, you know, find what we have actually. We didn't collect consciously, you know, internationally in that sense, but there are works that, you know, we can bring forth that are, you know, from South America or South Africa, for example, that was not so well represented in Sweden before. We were always looking at New York and Paris, you know, for many years.
Right. Well, so many people were in the West. And, but it seems also that Sweden holds a special place in terms of funding for the arts. I mean, maybe it's comparable to the Netherlands. I don't really know. So, but I've talked to some artists there, and it seems that there is great support there. And I think as a curator, that's very exciting. Is there that kind of great support? Am I overstating it, or how does it?
If you ask the young artists, they would say it's not so great, I think, maybe, because, and it's also kind of making up for a market that is very, very quite weak in Sweden. But I think it's true. And also as a state-run museum, I think we are less dependent on trustees and so forth, even though we have corporate sponsors and great important friends of the museum as well, but we have a kind of a starting point finance from the state, which gives a certain freedom, I think.
Well, and you say that for younger artists it may not look like so much support, but isn't there quite a bit of support for mid-career artists there? I mean, the Netherlands, there's grants and residencies that are often...
It's true. It is, and you can get work stipends and things like that. But I'm just recognizing that nevertheless, it's difficult for an artist, a young artist, to survive. But there are. I just came back from a stipend lunch where I was on the jury. We gave money to three young artists, and also we have
Talk about that a little bit, what does that mean to give money to three young artists? And typically, because we're talking about a state stipend, that's interesting. How long does that last, and how does that work? Because I don't think we have anything quite like that in the United States and at all.
Well, I think there are work stipends, for example, that you can apply for if you have a project, and it doesn't have to be, you know, they try not to exclude people who work in the studio and make paintings, for example. It doesn't have to be a project like with a beginning and an end, but you apply for a year of work, for example, and it gives you a break to, you know, be able to pay the rent and eat without selling art that year, if you see what I mean. So
yes,
they can get a, and as I said, it's not as easy. I mean, it's a pretty good gallery scene in Stockholm, but I think it's they sell for less than they would in London or New York, for example. It's almost like you could, if a painting costs 50,000 Swedish crowns, it's, you know, three times, they would sell for three times in New York, you know, it's...
Right.
Yeah, the prices are much higher there, so it's...
And in terms of the relationship with international contemporary artists, are there also residencies that either the Museet is involved in or the state where there's an exchange of international artists?
Definitely, yeah. Not the museum, but we are in touch with, and there is an organization called International Artist Studio Program in Sweden, very long, short, JASPIS, and it's both for Swedish artists in Stockholm and two other cities, and then but also they have studios in London and many places around the world where you know, they can send an artist. But we also receive international artists, so that's the idea, to also have some of them are quite established and great, and others are emerging. So it's kind of to mix up the art scene in Sweden, to have somebody, you know, like years ago, maybe it was Gerard Byrne had a stipend here, and you know, work and live here for a while. So it's kind of creates friendships and dialogues and so on.
That's wonderful. So, not a residency, but he's applying from outside of the country to the state. Is that what that is?
They apply, but they can actually even be invited. So I think not, because at least some years ago, I'm not sure I followed this completely, but when it was a rather new program, they invited artists because they didn't expect anybody to know about it. So it was almost like a curatorial selection, you know, you invite people you're interested in to come and stay. And yeah.
So in closing, can you tell us, I mean, there's listeners that are in different parts of the world, but what's coming up at the Moderna Museet that perhaps they should see, or you can... there'll be links on this interview to the museum and what's happening there. But is there anything you'd like to highlight? This interview will be out in November of this year, and will be continued to be listened.
Well, in November they can still see our big Olafur Eliasson show that's up, and we will also have Francesca Woodman still running on the second floor, and like I mentioned, Lina Selander, the Swedish filmmaker, video artists, and then there's the collection. So that's many of those shows goes up until January, and then our director Daniel Birnbaum is working with some others on a show which will be called Life Itself, which is a survey that he can, no, it's a thematic group show, contemporary art, and he would be able to speak much better about it, but just from the title, you can imagine it. It's about, you know, bare life or life, and in a way, what the border of between artificial life and, you know, it's kind of a speculative show. I'm looking forward to seeing it myself. I know very little about it, I'm afraid. So soon we will have kind of press releases and things like that, I think. But it comes in February, something like that, yeah.
And in Malmo, is there something coming up that we should also know about?
Yeah, we just opened Hanna Ryggen, who was this Norwegian maker of tapestries and also living in Sweden part of the time, that was shown at the last Documenta also, and made very political during World War II, for example, tapestries and weaves. And there's also a kind of contemporary film and video show on the second floor there called The New Human.
It's exciting.
And also my show is still there, which is also coming to Stockholm in March. Objects and Bodies Addressed and in Motion, with a kind of New York scene in the 60s.
I'd like to see that. Well, Magnus, thanks so much for talking with me today. It's really been a pleasure.
Thank you, Bernhard. It was nice to talk to you.
You're listening to Yale Radio WYBC. This is Brainerd Carey with the lives of the artists, architects, curators, and more.